This episode of Shameless is brought to you by Betty's Burgers. Celebrate Bestie Day this year with 2-for-1 burgers.
Welcome to Shameless, the pop culture podcast for smart people who love dumb stuff. You're joined, as always, by Melbourne writers Michelle Andrews and Zara McDonald.
Hello, Zara McDonald.
Hello, Annabelle Lee.
Hello.
Hi. We changed up the pacing very slightly. Coming up on today's show, Taylor Swift's 11th album, The Tortured Poets Department, is here, and boy, it's divisive. Hugh Grant has settled his case against the Sun newspaper. Sydney Sweeney responds to those quotes about not being pretty or talented. Is Mark Zuckerberg hot now? Victoria Beckham's celebrating her 50th while her husband David is suing his old buddy Mark Wahlberg. And then we get to play Slow News Lane. I can't wait.
It's kind of funny because it sounds like a pretty jam-packed lineup.
I know. No, I just wanted to play it. It's been Best Michelle, how are you? What are you recommending for me?
I'm good. I've got two recommendations this week.
Lovely.
I've been watching a lot of stuff on my screens. The first one, would we like to start with something sugary or something dark?
Dark into first. Sugary.
Agreed. Okay. Baby Reindeer on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
I need to issue a heartfelt apology to Shameless Media's head of podcasts, Lucy Hunt. She ran into the office practically last week and was like, guys, Baby Reindeer, who's watching? And we all laughed at her and said, what is this Baby Reindeer thing you keep speaking of?
But she didn't say, who's watching? She would say, guys, Baby Reindeer? And I was like, I don't know what you're saying to
no,
me.
No, I don't want a Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, like, no.
And every time I'd talk about another TV show, she'd pop up and go, Baby Reindeer? And I had to let her down and say, no, Lucy, I'm not watching Baby Reindeer. Then I noticed it had climbed to number one on the charts on Netflix.
And you thought, there's my bandwagon.
Yes. If only I was like Lucy and was on this last week. I know a lot of you are already loving this. If you're not familiar, Baby Reindeer is a 7-episode drama / comedy, maybe. It is the true story of a comedian who finds himself with an obsessed stalker. It is a little bit dark. It is mostly fascinating. It is the most unique show I've ever watched.
I said to you after this recording, can you just walk with me to get a coffee and just tell me what happens, because I don't think I'm going to watch this.
Look, I will say a lot of people told me this was scary. I disagree. It's not scary. It is dark and it is a bit twisted. But if you're like me and you don't like thrillers, you'll still like this.
Okay, then maybe don't tell me what happens. Maybe I will watch it.
I don't think you're ever going to watch it. I just know you and I think
Ollie was pitching it to me last weekend and I said no, but maybe I could say yes. I don't know.
The sugary recommendation. Zara, I don't need to tell you about this one because you love it just as much as I do. The Idea of You, Anne Hathaway's new rom-com. We were lucky enough to watch pre-screeners of it. It's out next week on Prime Video.
Give me the link.
I will.
I'll
give you early access.
Yeah.
Annabelle, the rom-com's back.
Oh, yes.
Dare I say, this is a flawless rom-com.
Oh, my God.
I loved every bit of it. I was like kicking my feet together as I was watching it. Anne Hathaway is perfection in The Idea of You.
It's a beautiful movie. Like, it's a beautiful rom-com. And when I say beautiful movie, it's not going to change the world, but it is bringing the rom-com back because I've missed a good one.
Yeah.
I think the thing that you said over lunch the other day, which has resonated ever since you said it, was like, it takes at this age, now that we're kind of entering our year 30, a good rom-com, like not a silly rom-com, for us to love it.
Yeah.
Like, we're not going to fall in love at this age with the movies we may have fallen in love with 10 years ago.
My bar is high these
days.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was really, really, really good. We're going to do an episode on the Shameless Book Club, a special bonus episode of the adaptation. So keep
Absolutely.
Your eyes peeled for that.
It's also Harry Styles fan fiction, essentially, which I think you need to talk to Zara McDonald, because last week we got so many DMs about you failing to recognize your favorite movie last week was also Harry Styles fanfic.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because the guy's not a pop star in After. So I don't know how I was meant to know that. But no, apparently after I recommended After last week, it was originally Harry Styles fanfic.
Yeah.
The Idea of You, definitely Harry Styles fanfic.
Oh, obviously Harry Styles fanfic.
So maybe this is just the new genre of stuff I'm into.
Zara loves Newsroom and Harry Styles fanfic.
Highs and lows, baby.
Sounds about right.
What about you? What are you recommending?
I have a recommendation to pick up your tennis racket and go play tennis, because that's what I've been doing. I am very bad. very, very bad. But I've realized the late 20s, early 30s, the hobby of the moment is trying to play tennis.
You're not the only one in the office. Our head of business development, Ree, is into tennis.
She started tennis lessons a few months ago again to pick back up the racket. I just entered the court and just fraying them left, right and center.
So to be clear, no lessons. You're just heading to the court with your husband.
Yeah, and my friends.
Played, oh my God, husband. Sorry. Just really hit me
we
hard.
We still say boyfriend or partner. It's fine.
Husband.
Ollie and I go down. I went down with some friends on Sunday. It is the best. I am having so much fun. I played on Saturday and Sunday.
Whoa,
on the weekend.
Okay,
if you were to have, like, say we were playing, we were swapping tennis cards and there was a card based on you and what your strengths and weaknesses are. Are you like a forehand girly? Are you a server? What are you on?
Unfortunately for me, I am neither a backhander or a server, which is like three quarters of the game. I can forehand. That's about it. No, that wasn't even my proper recommendation. That's just what I've been doing with my life and I'm really enjoying it. So, God, shout out to the hobby. I've never had one.
I think I'm actually due for a hobby.
Oh, it's like changed my life. Oh, I'm also starting to bake a little bit too. So I think, whoa, I'm really leaning into the hobby this year. Anyway, I really need to get to my recommendation because this episode will blow out. My recommendation this week is actually a newsletter from Pandora Sykes. I've spoken about her newsletter on our podcast before, Books and Bits. Mm. She's written one of my favorite pieces in the past about how she's able to read so much. This piece she's shared, I feel like you guys will really enjoy it. It's called Three Vintage Celebrity Interviews I Love. She's basically pulled out three of the greatest celebrity profiles of all time. You know how much I love a celebrity profile. The three she's chosen, I had only read one of them. So it's been really fun not just reading this piece and her analysis of them, but going back and reading the profiles. The first was of Demi Moore in Vanity Fair, which we actually spoke a lot about in our Scandal episode on her. But the other two were Marlon Brando by Truman Capote, which I'd seen kind of tweeted a lot about, but never really had time to read. And Leonardo DiCaprio for Interview Magazine at the age of 20. Ooh. He looks and sounds like a baby. It's a really great piece. They're really great profiles. And I loved it.
Oh my God, amazing. I can't wait to read them.
Will you actually?
No, I actually will. I don't think you can get me with Marlon Brando and Truman Capote.
That's all right.
I will be reading Leo for Interview Mag.
That's fine. Shall we get into the quick and dirty? Because we have five or six. I'm constantly scrolling. At least I don't have an iPad today. Six top stories from the rough and tumble of the celebrity and pop culture news cycle.
Absolutely. Can we?
Do you want to take us away?
Yes. Should I give you a nickname first?
I don't know who's meant to give it a nickname. I don't know.
Annabelle, to mix it up, give us both a nickname.
Oh, dear. Oh, the pair of you.
Yep, go on.
Zara and Michelle Shameless McDonald.
Oh, we took my married name.
That's okay. That's Michelle fine. McDonald kind of rolls off the tongue.
It kind of does. Do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Our first story, underwhelming or a triumph? Critics can't seem to agree on Taylor Swift's Tortured Poets Department. That is from HuffPo. Obviously, we are starting here. Tortured Poets is out. It has smashed all the records that Taylor Swift previously set for her 2022 album, Midnights.
Yeah, now Spotify announced it now holds the record for the most streamed album in a single day. It's also the first album to receive 300 million streams in a 24-hour period. It broke the same records on Apple Music and Amazon. Her single Fortnite, a collab with Post Malone, has also broken the record for Spotify's most streamed song in a single day. Too Long didn't read. All the records are broken.
All the records are broken. Now let's talk about the response to the music. We're going to talk about the reviews, then our takes, and then we're going to talk about the celebrity angles within it all. Of course, this wasn't any ordinary album release. 2 hours after it went live, Taylor surprised fans with an announcement that it was a surprise double album, 31 songs in total. She wrote on socials, "I'd written so much tortured poetry in the last 2 years and wanted to share it with all of you."
Yeah, the feedback has been mixed, skewing positive, definitely. Some outlets definitely praised it. The Guardian gave it 4 stars. Rolling Stone's review was glowing. They called the album gloriously chaotic. The Times UK gave it a perfect 5. But there has been other discourse as well. In fact, another piece in Rolling Stone declared Taylor Swift and Jack Antonoff have reached their limit, which I found interesting.
Same. The New York Times review said the album was in desperate need of an editor. One line read, "As the album goes on, Swift's lyricism starts to feel unrestrained, imprecise, and unnecessarily verbose." It went on to read, "It's lacking the depth and taut structure of her best work." Swifties hated that New York Times review in particular. The level of outrage at the negative review is truly something to behold. People were so upset the New York Times reviewer didn't like it.
It was really fascinating to scroll through those comments because there was such a wave of people who were so sure that the reviewer was wrong and that they were right, but that beyond that, there was a comment or two very high up that had been very well liked, which kind of likened a music review to tearing women down. And I was like, this is really interesting discourse now because art analysis and art reviews have been a thing for centuries. Mm. Every time anyone puts any art into the world, particularly music, there are entire jobs dedicated to reviewing that. It is fascinating to me that when one person at the New York Times has reviewed Taylor Swift's album and not kind of praised it glowingly, everybody thinks that it's personal criticism.
Yeah, I've also noticed two very interesting things happen on either side. Over on Twitter, which is, I guess, the stuff that I'm being fed on my Twitter feed is anti-Taylor, anti-this album. There's a theory that Taylor Swift's publicity team are paying publications for positive reviews. On the Taylor Swift Reddit thread, where the diehard Swifties are, there's a theory that there's this uprising of angry music reviewers who are purposefully giving her negative reviews. So everyone, I guess like both sides of this Taylor Swift debate, they're so polarized.
There's also a lot of people are offended. People are offended by people who like Taylor Swift. People are offended by people who don't. And it's an incredibly strange and very aggressive and binary discourse right now. It's like quite stressful, truthfully.
Oh my God. We posted a video on our TikTok of different members of the team reviewing the album, giving their hot takes. And what we got back was just fascinating. Some people being like, you guys just don't get it. This criticism is ridiculous. It's like we've forgotten that music is quintessentially subjective. And it's so fine for us to all disagree. And I'm sitting here as someone who has always loved Taylor Swift music and is one of her biggest fans. It's fine if someone doesn't like the album. That's okay. It doesn't ruin my experience of the album.
Yeah, but I think that's where we've got to with a lot of conversations online, not just about Taylor Swift and this album in particular, but this idea of if you don't like the thing that I like, that is a personal slight on me and you are personally affecting me and that is therefore now impacting my experience of that thing, which is really odd to me because it's like your experience is your experience. Like you can allow no one else to have an impact on that.
And to be clear, it's both sides. On Twitter, if you think the lyrics are clever, if you think they are poetry, you're an idiot. On TikTok, if you happen to not like the album, you're an idiot for not getting Taylor's vision and not understanding her genius.
It's really funny. All right, with all of that in mind, what do you actually think?
Oh, okay. I think there are multiple skips on this album, which I haven't really felt for so many of her albums in the past. I think a lot of the songs bleed into each other and I can't really recall them off the top of my head. And I have listened to them all multiple times now. I do think, though, there are some of my favourite songs she's ever recorded in the midst. My favourites are My Boy Only Breaks His Favourite Toys, So Long London, absolutely slaps, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me. My absolute favourite, perhaps my favourite song she's ever produced is How Did It End, which is part of the anthology. It's about gossiping and I love it.
Well, I haven't listened very well to the second half yet because
it's a lot of music.
It's a lot of music. And I've been quite open about my struggle with new music. I find it very hard to know what I like straight away. And so when I listened to the first half of the album straight away, I was like, okay, I get it. I really like it. This never happens to me straight away. And then she released 15 more songs. And I was like, no more. I can't do this. I'm overwhelmed. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to put the second half to bed for the moment. Get my head around the first, and then when I feel comfortable with that, it's like studying almost. Yeah. It's like once I feel comfortable with this part, I'll go to the next. So I can really only properly speak to the first half of the album, and I feel like I've listened to it a lot. I will say, hand on heart, it is my favourite album that she's done.
She likes the music first time.
I was like, this is my kind of Taylor in an album. Yeah. And I know that everybody's like, a lot of the songs sound the same and they bleed into each other. It's like, but that's the good stuff.
That's what I like.
My favourite songs. So Long London, I think, is the best breakup song she's written.
It's so good.
It's amazing. I really like Down Bad.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, that's also a banger.
But Daddy, I Love Him, even though I don't love the song title name.
Daddy.
It's not. Have you listened yet, Annabelle?
No. My sister tried to play it to me in the car because it's her favourite album as well, Zara. Mm. She played Black Dog, one of her favourites.
That's also great. Yep.
And the Florence one.
Oh, I love Florida.
Florida's yes. great.
I loved those two.
Florida is amazing. Did you know Emma Stone is credited on that song?
I did.
Interesting.
So fascinating. Can I actually tell you a little something that might make you feel better about your millennial red text on TikTok thing from last week?
I mean, sure. I was actually feeling pretty good about it. But yeah, go for it.
So my sister voice noted me, my older sister Claire, voice noted me to tell me what her favourite songs were on the album. She needed time to sit with it, voice noted me yesterday, and I'm sitting in my car listening to it. And she goes, oh, I really like this song. I think it's called Iomi. Iomi's a really good song. And I'm sitting there going,
no.
What the fuck is she talking about?
No, she's not.
Claire's so millennial, she thought Love of My Life, LOML, read Iomi.
Oh, I can't laugh. I am one. But I will.
Millennials rejoice.
I'm a Gen Z. I can laugh.
You can laugh. I think we need to touch on the fact that there were 31 songs as well, because that is actually fundamentally too many for me in one album. I can't lie about that. I am much more of a fan of, you know, quality over quantity. And I know that Taylor Swift has often said, particularly in the wake of kind of the Reputation era of her career, that she realized in quite a stark way that the answer to a lot of the hate she gets online and the answer to any tough time is putting out work. Like, she realizes that the work silences people, and it has for years. Mm. And her putting out a 31 song album made me wonder if that will always be true, if work will always be the answer, and if there will actually be such thing as too much work, that we're drowning in the work and it loses its novelty a little bit.
I do think something psychologically happens when you put out 31 songs in a day. And I think psychologically, even if it's not the case, even if the music and the quality is all banger, my brain went, it can't all be banger because there's so much of it. And my brain did do that thing of, well, we're going quantity over quality.
Yeah, which may not be fair.
It may not be true, but I think it's probably placebo effect, probably isn't the right term, but it's kind of coming to me here, where we think we're being overfed, therefore we don't like the food as much.
Yeah.
Whereas when there's scarcity, we treasure it more. There's an abundance, so we're more likely to point to the stuff that doesn't hit as much.
Well, I think you talk about any great marketing strategy, and scarcity is part of it,
yeah,
like rather than excess. Can we talk about the celebrity elements of this album? Because there was a lot of storytelling here, and I thought all of it was going to be about Joel, and it wasn't.
At least you're not on record a couple of months ago suggesting that this was going to be about a Joe Alwyn cheating storyline. I got it so wrong.
I have a lot of thoughts about this because I felt quite bad for Joe when initially the track list was released, because I was like, if he did nothing wrong, this is super rough because everybody's talking about him and speculating on what he may have done to piss her off.
Mm-hmm.
The album's come out and it's very clear, very, very clear that most of it's about Maddie Healy. So Long London is clearly about Joe, but it's very much like, I'm sad and we broke up. Like that was it.
Yeah, I think the only ones about him might be Love of My Life and So Long London. But then again, Love of My Life could be about both of them or Maddie.
Yeah, exactly.
Or about Iomi. Yeah. Who really knows?
Shout out to Iomi.
And it made me wonder, I don't know if it was fair of her, I do believe, to put out that track list months ago. She would have known that everybody thought it was Joe rather than Maddie Healy.
Because
none of us believed the Maddie Healy relationship was true.
And Guilty as Sin, Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, all those track names. Yeah, you're right. I was in the right to make this outlandish call.
No, you absolutely were.
Yeah, well, when I listened, I was shocked to realise that so much of this was actually about the on-again, off-again situationship with Maddie Healy. I think we can pretty conclusively say that these two have been connected in some way for the better part of a decade. All those rumours that maybe they dated back in 2014 seem to line up when you look at these lyrics. It seems like also, at least my interpretation is, that maybe Taylor left Joe for Maddie.
I think perhaps it wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
Me trying to be delicate, but just saying, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Well, we know, I feel like we know the timeline tells the story as well. Taylor performed with the 1975 in Jan last year. She then reportedly split with Joe in February. Her songs in this album reference an endless February where she very quickly gets into a relationship with someone else. There's also the song Guilty as Sin that talks about lusting after someone you shouldn't be when you're in a relationship with someone else. we then get the impression that Maddie Healy ghosted her a few months into their relationship.
Yeah, Maddie Healy has absolutely been the guy that she's known for 10 years, on and off. They've always
danced
had
around
this
it.
Invisible string.
Yeah. Oh. Mm.
Yeah.
You're like, yep, I said it.
And that's on that.
Okay, I'm actually, the thing was, that just came to me in the moment.
Mic drop, end of the episode.
Wait, he is absolutely the guy that's been around for 10 fucking years, has not left her alone. They've always thought that they were destined to end up together because they're both like tortured poets.
Yeah.
Oh, not again.
I know, I can't stop. And I do believe that she finally got out of this relationship with Joe and he promised her the world. He was like, this is going to be it. This is us. This is our lifetime. And then he fucked off within a month or two.
Yeah, agree. Maddie definitely cops it the most as well. While Taylor implies that Joe maybe stole her youth, promised her marriage and babies and never delivered, she reserves her contempt for Maddie. He is the subject of the smallest man who ever lived in his Jehovah's Witness suit.
Yes.
He cops it. That song is the most scathing song I have ever read Taylor Swift write. And it's about Maddie Healy.
I know. What about Thank You, Amy? Because obviously we saw in that title, three letters were capitalized and they were K-I-M to read Kim.
Yeah.
Kim Kardashian.
That I'm like, this first time hearing of it.
Wait.
Is this the first time?
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I've been so checked out.
Annabelle, I love that you represent some of the listeners, though, because some of the listeners also wouldn't have seen this, and that's precious.
Well, I felt embarrassed because I messaged it to Michelle, like, at 9 o'clock on Friday, being like, oh, my God, I missed this, and she goes, where have you been?
Oh, shit.
That was 9 o'clock. That was like,
I was like, sweetie, we've been unpacking this on Twitter for 5 hours.
You were being very gentle with me then. Yeah. And I appreciate that so much.
I just gave you a pat on the head.
Yeah. So she sings in this song, I don't think you've changed much, and so I changed your name and any real defining clues. Mm. This didn't really land for me. Beyond, I just don't understand why we're still talking about this. It didn't really stir up, beyond the 3 hours on Twitter that I missed, didn't really stir up the kind of fun controversy discourse I think she maybe thought it would.
Yeah, look, we all know how I feel about Taylor. And what Kim Kardashian did all those years ago was genuinely fucked up. But I find this cringeworthy. Like, the Kim Kardashian feud is 8 years old now. I know it's kind of been regenerated by new headlines and new updates and new versions of the video and blah, blah, blah. But it just doesn't seem like the powerful, cool, kick-ass thing to do to bring it up again and again and again. Like, she's done the whole response to Kim Kardashian. Also, sorry to Kim, but she's less relevant than ever. So I really don't think there's appetite for this anymore. I don't care.
I think that's absolutely part of it. No one's talking about Kim at the moment. They're deliberately kind of keeping their heads down. So I don't know why we'd care about this.
It feels like punching down now.
Oh, sorry. No, I think Kim knew.
Sorry to Kim. You think Kim knew?
Definitely.
You think this was, they got on the call?
Yeah, I think that was a call. I definitely think she knew. I don't think you're doing this anymore without letting them know.
Do you think a Skims campaign featuring Taylor Swift is on the way?
Oh, it'd be a bit too obvious, but I'd be still celebrating.
Yeah, okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
The last one we have to talk about is track 18, I'm Gonna Get You Back.
I cannot believe this happened. As soon as I listened to I'm Gonna Get You Back, my brain straight away went, hang on, this is basically another version, a 2.0 to Olivia Rodrigo's Get Him Back.
Oh,
both
yes.
have the exact same meaning. It's the double meaning of I want you back romantically and I want to exact revenge. I am so surprised that Taylor Swift included this song on her album, given the controversy around these two and her reputation, or at least the headlines that suggested that she took legal action against Olivia for interpolating New Year's Day and Cruel Summer.
Annabelle's been shaking her head behind that mic.
Well, because this is one of the songs that Amanda played me. And I was listening to the lyrics in the car being like, this is my gal Olivia's whole premise of that song.
And I liked Olivia's better. I just cannot believe, even though I'm Gonna Get You Back is a good song, Get Him Back is arguably better and it was done before it. Why wade into this shit show, which in my opinion is one of the ugliest shit shows Taylor's been involved with in the last 2 years?
Well, allegedly. We don't know that much about it, but yeah, it's kind of weird.
She does also kind of reference the shit show in another song. In the lyrics of Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, she sings, I'm always drunk on my own tears. Isn't that what they all say? That I'll sue you if you step on my lawn. That I'm fearsome and I'm wretched and I'm wrong. maybe the headlines are bullshit, I don't know. But I just would not make the same choice that Taylor Swift did putting this song out.
I would love to know what she thinks of everybody guessing what these songs are about. Like, do we just look like fools? Do we? That's all I want to know.
Coming up after the break, Hugh Grant settles case against the Sun for enormous sum. But first, a word from today's sponsor. Zara, we know life can get busy and stressful, but having your besties around to have a good chat and make memories with can really lighten up a day.
That is right, Mish. Our office lunchtime catch-ups around the dining table, I think, at work are proof of this. Our besties, Betty's Burgers, are celebrating this in their own delicious way on their biggest day of the year, Bestie Day, next Thursday, 2nd of May.
Yeah, you all know we love enjoying Betty's in the office, so this is one we aren't missing. The team at Betty's is going all out with 2-for-1 burgers.
That's right, you and your bestie can choose 2 of the same burgers for the price of 1. This year, you and your bestie can choose from 6 burgers, so there is truly something for everyone.
I think I can pretty confidently say we'll both be heading into a restaurant to make the best of Bestie Day. A Betty's Deluxe sounds like a treat, am I right?
Oh, yum, you know me too well. Whether it's a friend, partner, family, work colleague, or furry friend, Betty's is the perfect place to bring your bestie to share a special dining experience.
If you too want to celebrate Betty's Burgers Bestie Day, head to one of their restaurants or order on the Betty's app on Thursday, the 2nd of May, to enjoy 2-for-1 burgers with your bestie. Remember, it's only available on Thursday, the 2nd of May.
Thank you so much to our besties, Betty's Burgers, for making this episode of Shameless possible.
Our second story, Hugh Grant settles case against the Sun for enormous sum. Prince Harry may follow suit. That is from the Sydney Morning Herald.
Right. This is a really interesting story that kind of dropped just after we recorded last week, team. Hugh Grant has settled a privacy case against the publisher of the Sun newspaper, but it's not, importantly, the ending he wanted. So even though it was an enormous sum, even though he got a bit of cash, he did not want it. Now, for a bit of context here, Hugh Grant was suing the Murdoch-owned News Group newspapers, so NGN, and he was claiming that journalists had used private investigators to tap his phone and burglarize his house in 2011.
Wild.
He has been fighting, by the way, the British tabloids for some time. A huge part of his life and career now is fighting the British tabloids. He sued News of the World in 2012. He played a pretty key role in the Leveson inquiry into press standards and has been the public face of the Hacked Off campaign since it launched, who work really closely with victims of press abuse. Now, Hugh posted a really lengthy thread on X or Twitter about this, which I want us to read almost in full-ish because I think it's really important and interesting insight. Do you want to kick us off?
I absolutely do. For anyone who's been interested in my lawsuit against the Sun, the news is that I've had to settle my claim out of court before it gets to trial. News Group are claiming they are entirely innocent of the things I had accused the Sun of doing. Phone hacking, unlawful information gathering, landline tapping, the burglary of my flat and office, the bugging of my car, the illegal blagging of medical records, lies, perjury, and the destruction of evidence. As is common with entirely innocent people, they are offering me an enormous sum of money to keep this matter out of court. I don't want to accept this money or settle. I would love to see all the allegations that they deny tested in court. He went on, but the rules around civil litigation mean that if I proceed to trial and the court awards me damages that are even a penny less than the settlement offer, I would have to pay the legal costs of both sides. My lawyers tell me that is exactly what would most likely happen here. Rupert Murdoch's lawyers are very expensive. So even if every allegation is proven in court, I would still be liable for something approaching £10 million in costs. I'm afraid I'm shying at that fence.
Yeah, it's really a tough one because my understanding of how this works, right, is that if you are kind of suing somebody and you are offered a pretty good settlement before it goes to court, they want you to take that so you don't waste court resources, and that if you do push it to a trial and you don't get the same result, I can understand why they want to penalize you for that and punish you for that to really encourage you to kind of take the best offer early.
Yeah.
So I understand that as a concept. I don't love it here for the same reason that Hugh Grant doesn't love it, because all he wants and all the Hacked Off campaign wants is for one of these cases to play out in court again so people can see all of the evidence they say they have. His tweets went on. Rupert Murdoch has spent over $1 billion in damages, in claimants and lawyers' fees, settling over 50 1,500 claims in this way. Oh. He seems remarkably determined that there shouldn't be a trial of the facts. Murdoch's settlement money has a stink and I refuse to let this be hush money. I've spent the best part of 12 years fighting for a free press that does not distort the truth, abuse ordinary members of the public, or hold elected MPs to ransom in pursuit of newspaper barons' personal profit and political power. So this money will be repurposed via groups like Hacktoff into the general campaign to expose the worst excesses of our oligarch-owned press.
I am fist pumping for my boy Hugh Grant. I cannot believe it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. In response, BBC broadcaster John Simpson tweeted, and I've actually added a few alleges into his tweet.
Look at you saving us from litigation.
I wasn't sure if I needed to, but I thought I will.
Well, Rupert Murdoch's got deep pockets.
Yeah, he does. John Simpson tweeted this: not a single one of the many cases brought against The Sun for alleged illegal activity, unlike the defunct News of the World, has come to court, where the full evidence would have been made public. The cost to Rupert Murdoch of keeping the alleged full sort of detail secret is staggering.
Allegedly.
Yeah. You might be wondering as well, we mentioned Prince Harry in that headline. This Hugh Mungo Grant news will likely be a blow to a wider case against The Sun that Harry was a part of. So Harry and Hugh both had the same lawyer. And according to Yahoo, that lawyer, David Sherboyne, told a hearing at the High Court last week that Harry and other claimants may face a similar predicament and have settlements forced upon them.
Team Harry and Hugh all the way.
I know, who would have thought?
Our third story is Sydney Sweeney defends herself against producer who said she's not pretty or talented. That is from Vanity Fair. At an event last week, the veteran Hollywood producer, Carol Baum, said that Sydney Sweeney is not pretty and can't act, particularly in her recent blockbuster, Anyone But You, which Carol deemed unwatchable.
Yes. So if you're not aware, Carol Baum is an 81-year-old producer who has worked across stuff like Father of the Bride and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She now teaches at USC. She was interviewed on stage in New York following a screening of one of her films, like a 1988 film, Dead Ringers, and Sydney Sweeney's name came up. And she said she had asked students on her producing course at USC, explain this girl to me. She's not pretty. She can't act. Why is she so hot?
Yikes. Naturally, this got picked up and run everywhere. In response, Sydney defended herself through her rep. The rep shared a statement with Variety that read, "How sad that a woman in position to share her expertise and experience chooses instead to attack another woman. If that's what she's learned in her decades in the industry and feels is appropriate to teach her students, that's shameful. To unjustly disparage a fellow female producer speaks volumes about Miss Baum's character."
It's curious here because we haven't seen or heard much from Carol Baum since this came out. TMZ posted or published a report saying they spoke to her, but we don't have direct quotes. Here's how their report reads. "As for Carol herself, she's already expressing regret over the whole thing, telling TMZ she wishes she never would have made her original comments and that crapping on an actor like that in public isn't usually her style. Carol goes on to say she's been getting a ton of hate mail over this." So that's the only time we've heard from Carol. And she expresses regret about the whole thing and laments that she's getting hate for it. I don't condone anyone getting hate mail, but it's interesting here that the first thing you don't say is, "I'm sorry. I shouldn't."
I regret it because I'm copying it now.
I also find it fascinating because we also haven't heard much from Janet Maslin, who was the New York Times critic who interviewed Carol Baum on stage. All we've got from her was a tweet where she retweeted this making the news.
Okay.
And she said, "It is unwatchable," with "is" in capital letters. Carol Baum said this after we screened Dead Ringers at the Jacob Burms Film Center, and she mentioned having seen Anyone But You on a plane, but Dead Ringers gets better and better. Which is odd given it's the only thing I can see on her Twitter feed that's responding to this as well.
God.
Like, you've got another woman older than Sydney trying to shit on the work that she's doing.
But it's also just like, again, no, it's not unwatchable. It's unwatchable to you. It is subjective. Anyone But You has grossed over $200 million at the box office.
Well, I find the term unwatchable very funny. It's like, what do you mean unwatchable?
So drastic. So fucking pretentious. It's also, sorry, pretentious as. It's so snobby.
It's just not true. I watched it. Like, it's like, by definition, watchable.
It's so annoying. On Sunday, after a few days of ongoing headlines around this story, Sydney posted a carousel on Instagram. She was on holiday with a bunch of friends. Included in the dump was a bunch of photos of her wearing a sweatshirt with the lettering across it, "Sorry for having great tits and correct opinions."
Love it. Love it so much.
Our fourth story. Mark Zuckerberg reacts to viral photoshopped beard pic that fans thirsted over. Who did this? That is from People. I thirsted over it.
Yeah, so did I. Unfortunately, or fortunately, Mark Zuckerberg did not grow a beard and did not randomly get hot. The Meta founder and CEO, who is 39 now, was trending this week after an altered photo of him went viral for looking pretty good.
Very good. This all started on April 18 when Mark Zuckerberg shared an Instagram video of him announcing a new version of Meta AI. In a poetic moment, we ended up talking about a new AI version of him.
So actually, this is the Meta AI.
This, yep. I get it.
Get there.
I don't get it, but I'm going to pretend like I do.
The AI is Meta. It's all Meta.
Oh, yes. No, I get it.
We're on the same page. So
get to my level.
You're on fire today.
Another mic drop. We have Mike Rundle to thank for this. He goes by the username @flyosity. He was the one to add a beard and moustache to the screen grab of Mark Zuckerberg smirking slightly. He shared it on X. By the way, are we officially, as Shameless Podcast, now just saying X?
I actually think so.
I'm not happy about it, but I think going forward, just saying X. According to People Mag, this post received more than 2 million likes. And then a side-by-side of Zuckerberg, beardless, and then with beard, captioned, "It's crazy how much a beard can change a man's life," got 22 million views.
Going to be honest here, thought it was real for a bit too long.
I thought it was real for like 2 days.
Yeah.
And I was also so into it. You and I were going back and forth. We're like, what has he done? I'm like, filler?
Yeah.
Spray tan?
We were going really deep.
Sarah was like, it can't just be filler.
I was like, it's got to be more than this.
Book all fat removal.
It was honestly just an AI beard.
Brazilian butt lift. Honestly, it all. He had it all.
In a now expired Instagram story, Mark Zuckerberg tried to sort of get in on the joke. He responded by sharing a photo of a razor alongside the thinking emoji face.
I liked this.
And he was overlaid with the Jack Harlow song, "They Don't Love It." Even his wife, Priscilla Chan, got in on the joke too, sharing photos to her story saying, "Anyone seen my husband? Who's this guy?" I'm sorry, can the billionaires let us have our jokes? Get the fuck out of it. Especially when we're laughing at them.
He should grow a beard, though. I think he really should. A beard actually can change a man's life.
Wow.
I get quite upset when my husband shaves his beard.
Oh, I hate it.
I just think there should be a rule.
But not when your husband shaves his beard. Your husband looks good with beard.
I think there should be a law that all men have beards.
I like
beards. I think you just, man, if you're listening.
Can you imagine if a podcast of three men said, "I think all women should have short hair"? It doesn't kind of hit the same.
But we're lucky. We can say things like this. And with that in mind, our fifth story. Inside Victoria Beckham's lavish 50th birthday party, all of the Spice Girls reunite in dream come true as even Jerry Horner shows up at the last minute for Posh's £250,000 bash with champagne, cocktails and dancing planned for well into the early hours. That is from the Daily Mail.
Yes, Victoria Beckham turned 50 last week and she doesn't do anything by halves, Mish.
No, she doesn't. She threw a massive birthday party at the weekend. She wore an incredible dress. I know I've been saying all episode things are subjective, but this was an objectively incredible dress. It was like this minty green colour. It was sheer. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of the best dresses I've seen in the last month, couple of months. It was a great dress. She did arrive on crutches because she'd recently broken her foot at the gym. Mm. The party was at Oswald's, which is like this private members club in Mayfair, where according to the Daily Mail, 100 guests enjoyed dinner, fizz and cocktails and dancing into the early hours. We had all the Spice Girls there. And every time this happens, I still find it totally remarkable that those five are still friends.
I know.
This many years on. Because it would be so, so natural for two or three of them to still be in touch. I'm not expecting bad blood, but you generally do drift from people decades.
Anyone who's listened to our Spice Girls scandal series will know that some shit did go down
That's
between
true.
Jerry and Mel B. I will always be shocked that Jerry and Mel B are still close-ish.
Well, a lot of shit went down when they were in the band as well. So the fact they're all just like still friends. David Beckham posted a photo of them singing together, Stop, which I actually feel like he does every time they're together. And I'm like, can you give the real views to like Jerry or something?
Side note, are they actually going on tour together?
Yeah, this is funny. So Mel B posted a story of them singing with the caption, tour dates coming soon, which would be just a joke and that you'd kind of like push to the side and not think of. Mm. If not for the fact that last month she was on the Today Show, and when she was asked if there was anything in the works for the Spice Girls, she said, this is going to be really good and the fans are going to be really happy about it, without elaborating further.
Mm.
So I'm like, maybe there's something going on.
Yeah. We need to talk about the star-studded guest list as well. We had Rosie Huntington-Whiteley, Eva Longoria, Edward Enninful, our eternal crush, Gary Neville.
Do you remember Gary Neville?
I do. Hottie Gary Neville.
Yeah, normie hottie.
We also had Tom Cruise there. For some reason, I found this line in the Daily Mail piece very funny when I was researching this. Let's see if it's as funny today. Tom Cruise's attendance took many of the guests by surprise, though he made something of an entrance by bumping into a photographer, causing the man to fall over.
Oh, no.
Tom, please. We didn't have Nicola Peltz Beckham there.
No. She posted on Instagram saying she was with her grandmother. She said, I am so sad I'm not there to celebrate you and hug you, sending all my love from me and my nonny. And she said, I miss you all so much.
There you go. According to the Daily Mail, the party was just one of several celebrations Victoria is using to mark her 50th. Apparently, David Beckham chartered a jet to fly close family to the south of France for dinner at the £200 a head. Oh, God.
Here she goes.
Okay. All right. La Colombe d'Or or in St. Paul de Vence. The way it just rolled off the tongue.
Took me back to Paris.
I'm on holiday, baby.
How sick story. David Beckham. Old mate David's back because he's suing Mark Wahlberg over a $60 million loss. That is from news.com.au.
Yeah, so David Beckham and Mark Wahlberg are in a legal dispute. The two apparently became close friends when they lived near each other in Los Angeles in 2007. And then David Beckham became F45's global ambassador in 2021. For the record, F45 is an Australian company. It started in Sydney before becoming huge internationally. And Mark Wahlberg's company bought a minority stake, which was actually quite a chunky stake.
36%.
Exactly, a while ago. So Mark Wahlberg's now kind of also the public face of F45.
Yeah. According to The Sun, David's firm, it's called DB Ventures LTD, is claiming Mark Wahlberg duped him into becoming a global ambassador. According to reports, David is also suing Mark Wahlberg's firm, it's called Mark Wahlberg Investment Group, as well as F45 founders Adam Gilchrist and Rob Dutch. Adam Gilchrist is not the cricketer.
No, not to be confused. I'm sure our audience was getting very confused.
I wouldn't
all
have guessed.
All these athlete names, though. F45 founder was one of the best wicketkeepers Australia's ever had.
Hey, we do
have. I'm just kidding. I would get confused. But did you know who? Have you heard of that wicketkeeper?
That's the first time I've heard of that name. I was like, F45, cool.
Now, it's all a bit of legal stuff, but essentially, David Beckham is claiming he's £8.5 million or $16 million AUD in the red because stocks he was promised when he signed on as global ambassador were withheld from him until after the share prices of the company plummeted.
Yeah, in response, Mark Wahlberg's lawyers said in a statement, the 209-page, 610-paragraph complaint tries to make up in length what it lacks in merit, which is quite a good line.
Yeah, it's actually a bit of a slay.
I'm Team David here. I'm not a huge Wahlberg fan.
I'm also Team David, and I guess the friendship is over.
I think it is. Do we know what time it is now?
It's time for Slow News Week. Quite a lengthy, girthy episode.
Girthy,
oh,
better not.
A bit of girth in this one.
Why are you acting like that?
Yeah, come on, Annabelle. What are you thinking of?
Get out of the gutter.
You know what? Just hit the pebble button.
Then it's Slow News Week. Don't worry. They'll go back to not recognizing you soon enough.
Just to add a bit of chunk to the game. Let's play.
It's a fat episode.
It's pretty chody.
Oh, this isn't a chody episode, though, because it's so long.
What if they stop for in length? It lacks in merit.
It's a long and girthy episode. It's every person's dream.
No, Annabelle. Grow up. Why are you struggling so much? The Gen Zs. They're not as mature as us. All right, Slow News Week, Michelle. I am quizzing you. Annabelle, what are the scores at?
Oh, sorry. Let me get my notes up. So I ended up adding up all your scores from the beginning of this game.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So all up, Zara, you're on 4.5. Yeah. And all up, Mish, you're on 3. But as of this year, it's 1-1.
Okay, I think we just start clean slate. And then at the CEOs, we announce who won.
I think it's 1-1.
Cool.
Okay, so I'm quizzing you, Michelle. Okay. 3 questions.
I'm nervous because I really didn't read a lot this week.
That's so fine. These are all, I've given you multiple choice every time.
Fuck yeah. Let's do it.
Robert Downey Jr. Released his coffee brand in January this year. It's called Happy Products. How many Instagram followers does the brand have?
What the fuck? He launched it in January. This is even about this news. Week.
No, because they had like a recent launch this week. So I was like, I didn't know Robert Downey Jr. had a coffee company. And then I thought, why does no one follow it? Because the options are A, 1,600, B, 3,100, C, 5,200.
So stupid. I'm going to go A.
A, 1,600.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Damn.
It only has 5,000 Instagram followers. Now, I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be nasty.
Let's do it, though.
But he has 57 million Instagram followers. If you're launching a venture, you'd be hoping a few more of those carrying it off.
Yeah. That's, like, very low engagement for him.
Yeah. Also, Google it, Happy Products. It's coffee, but it looks like body wash.
Oh. Well, that's no good.
But I don't want to yuck this yum. Could be great, but I just find the packaging very interesting. It looks like body wash.
Okay. I'm not a fan.
All right. 0-1. Over the weekend, Skye Wheatley was crowned Queen of the Jungle.
Okay. Sitting upright. Yep.
In I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, who came second?
Fuck. I know who came equal fourth. Ellie Cole and Britt Hockley.
Okay, well, here we go. Brittany Hockley.
Okay, great. Okay, yep.
Tristan McManus or Callum Hall?
I actually am not sure I'm across either of these people very well. I know Callum might be a British personality and he was trending on my TikTok a lot for saying some pretty outrageous things. I think he actually confused photosynthesis with something that it's not. I'm going to go Callum.
Wrong.
Damn.
It was Tristan McManus, the Irish dancer and TV presenter. But according to TV Tonight, the real winner of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here was Robert Irwin. This is what TV Tonight wrote. The finale also capped off an amazing debut season by co-host Robert Irwin, whose natural charm and enthusiasm proved to be an inspired choice alongside Julia Morris. Irwin was faultless across the season with boundless confidence, comic timing, and ad-lib abilities, plus knowledge of local animals. He is the real winner of the season.
Go, Robert. I want nothing but the best for Robert Irwin.
Mm. I was like, this is a pretty tough job, and most people would not have expected it to be this well-received, so I'm impressed.
I love that.
All right, you're none from two.
Fuck.
You have to get this one.
Okay.
I wonder if you saw this around. A vintage deleted scene from The Princess Diaries went viral on TikTok this week.
I haven't seen this.
It showed Mia and Michael getting a pizza. Michael was arguing that he wanted what exactly on his pizza? Was it A, Snickers? B, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, or C, M&M's?
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Let's play the snippet.
Here you go.
Thank you. That guy had a great expression on his face when he asked for M&M's on your pizza.
Well, you know, actually,
do I look done here?
I always thought M&M's would go great on cheese pizza. No. I just could never get anyone to make it for me. You know, in my perfect universe, there would be M&M pizzas. Is that weird?
I ate my pizza backwards, so I'm not really the best judge.
What is, firstly, you're wrong. Secondly, what the fuck is this scene and why is it sad music?
Deleted for a reason. Also, not to shame you at all, Michelle. Oh. But the M&M's is a theme in the original Princess Diaries movie.
Oh. Well, you did shame me out of that.
You know when she sends him the apology pizza with the M&M's on it? And also when he's playing the piano, all the girls are like, oh my God, he's really cute. There are M&M's on the keyboard.
I thought those were Skittles.
Oh.
Well, maybe they were Skittles. Maybe I'm wrong.
It's so funny. When he's like, yeah, I just think like they should be M&M's on pizza. That's okay. And then the rest of the scene is like,
do all the kids at school think I'm weird? And she's like, I'm not going to name names, but yeah.
Like, and then they accidentally touch hands and there's like a solid 15 seconds of them looking longingly at each other.
Wait.
Yeah.
That was a scene between Mia and the guy she was crushing on.
Yeah. Michael.
I thought it was a scene between Mia and her bodyguard. No, and I can imagine the bodyguard being like, Reese's Pieces.
Reese's what? Reese's Pieces. All right. We got to go. Sorry, you're still on one.
It's okay. That's all right. It was a great episode. Very.
No, don't say it.
Very good. Very good. Thanks, Annabelle, for editing this.
I'm going to edit out every mention of Girth.
Don't.
We're putting it as the title.
I'm not clicking on that. Thanks, guys. We'll be back in your ears on Monday.
Bye.
See ya.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, it was time for an after-dinner mint.
It's been a while.
Oh, my God, I've got a mint in my mouth.
Oh, no way.
I'm recording with a mint
in my mouth.
You
know what that is? Meta.
Meta.
Ooh, I get that now.
Sorry, everyone. I'm going to have to take it out of my mouth.
A couple of things while Zara removes the saliva-laden mint
that's disgusting.
Out of her mouth.
I didn't do that.
Okay, episode wasn't that girthy. When we edited it together,
I knew that.
Oh, you did, and you told me as soon as we finished. Anyway, to add a little bit of extra girth, we actually had a very, very important pop culture story pop up after we finished the recording.
That's correct. Have we all seen that Kim Kardashian posted a photo with Karlie Kloss? Very interesting. Now, what she did was she posted a series of Instagram stories for Derek Blasberg's birthday. Derek Blasberg seems to just be friend of the stars.
Derek, professional celebrity friend.
He does pop up a lot. I've got to work out what he actually does, though. He's an American writer and socialite. There you go.
Of course.
I wasn't that far off.
Socialite.
And Karlie was in one of the photos on Derek's shoulder, and so was Kim and Kloss.
And Kim obviously posted this. And yes. We've got to think that it's quite targeted and quite specific after the Tortured Poets thing. Does this make you think, this photo of Kim and Karlie together, does it make you think that maybe Kim didn't know about the
I don't think Taylor and Karlie are on bad terms either. I think they're all just like having a bit of fun.
You think it's the omniverse of celebrity madness and chaos?
Yeah, but again, it's not that chaotic. Like, it's pretty soft. It's landing really softly for me. I'm like, ooh, I'm so scared.
So anyway, that's the story. There's a photo up. We knew you'd all be DMing us about it. And so here's your little segment on it.
And that's the after dinner mint.
Zara, mint, gobble it back up.
No, I'll get it back in. I will get a fresh one.
Bye.
Shameless Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favourite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.